Hello everyone, so I'm going to read on in War Horse for you. So I'm starting on chapter 16 because I know some people have their own book copy of it, so you can follow on, and if not, just listen to it. It's very strange recording yourself reading, but sure, I'll give it a go. Okay, chapter 16. From both sides of me, I heard a gradual crescendo of excitement and laughter rippling along the trenches, interspersed with barked orders and that everyone was to keep their heads down and no one was to shoot. From my vantage point in the mound, I could see only an occasional glimpse of a steel helmet, my only evidence that the voices I was hearing did indeed belong to real people. There was a sweet smell of cooking, food wafting towards me, and I lifted my nose to savour it. It was sweeter than the sweetest bran mash I had ever tasted, and it had a tinge of salt about it. I was drawn first one way and then the other by this promise of warm food. But each time I neared the trenches on either side, I met an impenetrable barrier of loosely coiled barbed wire. The soldiers cheered me on as I came closer, showing their heads fully now over the trenches and beckoning me towards them. And when I had to turn back at the wire and crossed no man's land to the other side, I was welcomed again there by a chorus of whistling and clapping. But again, I could find no way through the wire. I must have crisscrossed no man's land for much of that morning, and found at long last in the middle of this blasted wilderness a small patch of coarse, dank grass growing on the lip of an old crater. I was busying myself at tearing the last of this away when I saw, out of the corner of my eye, a man in a grey uniform clamber up out of the trenches, waving a white flag above his head. I looked up as he began to clip his way methodically through the wire and then pull it aside. All this time there was much argument and noisy consternation from the other side, and soon a small helmeted figure in a flapping khaki greatcoat climbed up into no man's land. He too held up a white handkerchief in one hand and began also to work his way through the wire towards me. The German was through the wire first, leaving a narrow gap behind him. He approached me slowly across no man's land, calling out to me all the while to come towards him. He reminded me at once of dear old Friedrich, for he was, like Friedrich, a grey-haired man in an untidy, unbuttoned uniform, and he spoke gently to me. In one hand he held a rope, the other hand he stretched out towards me. He was still far too far away for me to see clearly, but an offered hand in my experience was often cupped, and there was enough promise in that for me to limp cautiously towards him. On both sides the trenches were lined now with cheering men, standing on their parapets, waving their helmets above their heads. "Oi, boyo!" the shout came from behind me, and was urgent enough to stop me. I turned to see the small man in khaki weaving and jinking his way across no man's land. One hand held high above his head, carrying the white handkerchief. "Oi, boyo, where are you going? Hang on a bit. You're going the wrong way, see?" The two men who were coming towards me could not have been more different. The one in grey was the taller of the two, and he came nearer. I could see his face was lined and creased with years. Everything about him was slow and gentle under his ill-fitting uniform. He wore no helmet, but instead the peakless cap with the red band I knew so well, sitting carelessly on the back of his head. The little man in khaki reached us, out of breath, his face red and still smooth with youth, his round helmet with the broad rim falling askew over one ear. For a few strained, silent moments, the two stood yards apart from each other, eyeing each other warily and saying not a word. It was the young man in khaki who broke the silence and spoke first. "Now what do we do?" he said, walking towards us and looking at the German who stood head and shoulders above him. "There's two of us here and one horse to split between us. Of course, King Solomon had the answer, didn't he now? But it's not very practical in this case, is it? And what's worse, I can't speak a word of German. And I can see you can't understand what the hell I'm talking about, can you? Oh, hell. We should never have come out here. I knew I shouldn't. Can't think what came over me. And all for a muddy old horse too. But I can speak a little bad English, said the older man, still holding out his cupped hand under my nose. It was full of black bread, broken into pieces, a tidbit I was familiar enough with, but usually found too bitter for my taste. However, I was now too hungry to be choosy, and as he was speaking, I soon emptied his hand. I speak only a little English, like a schoolboy, but it's enough, I think, for us. And even as he spoke, I felt a rope slip slowly around my neck and tighten. As for our other problem, since I have been here the first, then the horse is mine. Fair, no? Like your cricket. Cricket? Cricket? Said the young man. Who's ever heard of that barbarous game in Wales? That's a game for the rotten English. Rugby, that's my game. And that's not a game. That's a religion, that is. Where I come from, I played scrum half for Maesteg, I think, before the war stopped me. And at Maesteg, we say that a loose ball is our ball. Sorry, said the German, his eyes burrowed with concern. I cannot understand what you mean by this. Doesn't matter, Jerry. Not important, not anymore. We could have settled all this peacefully, like Jerry, like the war. I mean, and I'd be back in my valley and you'd be back in yours. Still, not your fault, I don't suppose. Nor mine, neither, come to think of it. By now, the cheering from both sides had subsided and both armies looked on in total silence as the two men talked together beside me. The Welshman was stroking my nose and feeling my ears. You know horses then, said the tall German. How bad is his wounded leg? Is it broken, do you think? He seems not to walk on it. The Welshman bent over and lifted my leg gently and expertly, wiping away the mud from around the wound. He's in a mess right enough, but I don't think it's broken, Jerry. It's a bad wound, though, a deep gash wire by the look of it. Got to get him seen too quick, else the poison will set in, and then there won't be a lot anyone can do for him. Cut like that? He must have lost a lot of blood already. Question is, though, who takes him? We've got a veterinary hospital somewhere back our lines that could take care of that. Take care of him, but I expect you've got one too. Yes, I think so. Somewhere it must be, but I do not know exactly where, the German said slowly. Then he dug deep in his pocket and produced a coin. You choose the side you want. Head or tail, I think you say. I will show the coin to everyone on both sides, and everyone will know that whichever side wins the horse, it is only by chance. Then no one loses any pride, yes, and everyone will be happy. God, I want to flip the coin for joy. The Welshman looked up admiringly and smiled. All right then, you go ahead, Jerry. You show them the coin and you toss and I'll call. The German held the coin up in the sun and then turned a full slow circle before spinning it high and glinting into the air. As it fell to the ground, the Welshman called out in loud, resonant voice so that all the world could hear, heads. Well, said the German, stooping to pick it up. That's the face of my Kaiser looking up at me out of the mud, and he does not look pleased with me. So I'm afraid you have won. The horse is yours. Take good care of him, my friend. And he picked up the rope again and handed it to the Welshman. As he did so, he held out his other hand in a gesture of friendship and reconciliation, a smile lighting his worn face. In an hour, maybe, or two, he said, we will be trying our best to kill each other. God only knows why we do it. And I think he has maybe forgotten why. Goodbye, Welshman. We have shown them, haven't we? We have shown them that any problem can be solved between people if only they can trust each other. That is all it needs, no? The little Welshman shook his head in disbelief as he took the rope. Jerry, boy, I think if they would let you and me have an hour or two out here together, we could sort out this whole wretched mess. There would be no more weeping widows and crying children in my valley, and no more in yours. If the worst came to the worst, we could decide it all in a flip of a coin, couldn't we now? If we did, said the German with a chuckle, if we did it that way, then it would be our turn to win. And maybe your Lloyd George would not like that. And he put his hands on the Welshman's shoulders for a moment. Take care, my friend, and good luck. Auf Wiedersehen. And he turned away and walked slowly back across no man's land to the wire. Same to you, Boyle, the Welshman shouted after him. And then he turned and led me away back towards the line of khaki soldiers, who began now to laugh and cheer with delight as I limped towards them through the gap in the wire. Ooh, that's the end of the chapter. Let me know what you think of that. I'll put up some things down in the notes, all right? Okay, bye-bye.